I'm Will Hedrick.
And I'm Jordan Schaffer.
And this is Dog Years and Timestamps, a book club podcast.
I'm going to start off by saying that I think the fact that Kvothe left out all of the cool pirate slash seafaring banter that could have happened in the little arc of him going off to Severn.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we skipped ahead. We didn't talk about any of that. But on him going to Severn, I think that he must have just read the Lies of Loch Lomora, or what's the Seas Under Red Skies. That must be a perfect allegory is the wrong word, a perfect substitute for what happened.
Because
I haven't finished Red Seas Under Red Skies, so I can't make that claim, but I feel like it must be a perfect substitute, because why didn't he tell us? That sounds, a lot of dope shit sounded like it went down in that moment, like in that little arc he skipped.
I'm going to say that it's because Kvothe is not a strong enough character to carry a story by himself, and there wasn't going to be any other characters that mattered on those on the ship.
He's carrying the story by himself, though, while he's going to Severin.
Only for like, well, no, because then we start meeting who must be Mr. Ash, right? The guy who? He plays attack with all the time. I can't remember his name.
Really? You think he is?
He must be, right?
Why?
It feels obvious to me. We'll get into that maybe
what's
a little bit later.
Name?
I can't remember his name right now.
Oh, man.
But that guy.
That is a fan theory.
He's another character.
That is a fan theory. I know that for
seems
sure.
to matter. And then we also are dealing with the mayor all the time. And he matters.
Mm-hmm.
And then Dennis shows up not terribly long into his stay at Severin. So we get a cast of characters outside of him. And they all matter.
Yeah, and Dennis supposedly has never told anyone about Kvothe unless, like, they meet him.
Right,
like,
yeah.
She just happens to be with that person. Mm-hmm. And then, so it would fit that he could be you know, Mr. Ash, Master Ash. Man, what is his name? That's driving me crazy. They play Tack.
Yeah.
Hmm. Oh, well, it'll probably pop up.
Right, yeah. But so there's, he couldn't either, what I'm assuming happened, obviously, you know.
Yeah.
He couldn't come up with a reason for any of the characters that we already to know to be on the journey with him.
Mm-hmm.
Or a reason to create new characters for the sale
that's
to then matter and continue to matter afterwards.
That's what I want to believe, because I feel like he's so in depth that if he had written an arc about like a pirate voyage or whatever, like when he's going on the ship, I feel like Kvothe would have made friends, and then we would have had to bring one of those characters back later,
right? Yeah.
Or something significant would have had to happen. Like I see what you're saying. Maybe they just edit.
And so they can just like shipwreck him, have him start from zero again, and start, you know, a whole new arc. It's almost like those would be the filler episodes of an anime, right?
Yeah.
The ship episodes. Because nothing that matters happens except that it provides a starting off point at its end for the next story arc, you know?
A way for them to start at level one.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, I asked you before the show, but I'd like you to say it again. Do you like Kvothe yet?
No, I still don't.
Still no.
I think that he's exactly the same as he was when young Kvothe. I think he's still the exact same version of himself, character-wise, as he was when we first met him as young Kvothe. It's like he's learned nothing. It's like he hasn't had any personal growth.
Yeah.
Except for just like his stats is what I said before we were recording, you know, like he's leveled up in not alchemy, but, you know, sympathy and naming to some degree, and, you know, all the other things that he's studying at the school, and his general knowledge is more, but he still hasn't changed like on the inside, or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, he hasn't matured.
Yeah, he's still making the exact same mistakes for the exact same reasons, which is infuriating to me, because you would think that he would learn something. And like in the beginning, whenever he was like, you know, kind of like swashbuckling with his parents more, like, well, you know, he was acting like a swashbuckler, or he just kind of did whatever he wanted because he was just the kid in the troop or whatever, right? Obviously, they were not swashbuckling really. He mentions once or twice, like, you know, but I never did that again because I know better. Or like whenever he's playing tack with what's his name, he makes a mention of how he never, up to this point, hasn't beaten him, mm-hmm. but hasn't lost in the same way more than once. So he like says that like he learns things or whatever, but then he continues to make the exact same mistakes for the exact same reasons, you know, mistakes that have large story implications.
Yeah.
Even though he says that, you know, he's capable of like never making the same mistake twice or whatever, you know. And it's just, it's a frustrating clash of like what he says about himself and what he actually does and what we keep seeing over and over and over and over and over again.
Yeah. It seems like he doesn't do well in like the medium importance level situations, like all the, like say the politics with the mayor and like dealing with Ambrose. But like when they deal with the Dracus and when he had to make like an improvised heat sink to try to like stop the whole village from being on fire mm-hmm. in the first book, like, I feel like he does well under extreme situations, mm-hmm. but he doesn't necessarily do well in all of the medium situations he's dealt.
Right.
Yeah. And so it's like, I don't know. I do feel like at a certain point in this book, we will have leveled up that maturity factor, or the his experience in mm-hmm. life will go up. And I mean, this is his, like when, Illodin knew that he was leaving when he said goodbye or whatever. He right. was like, you know, I don't know if he said go chase the wind, but he was kind of implying yeah. like, this is your opportunity.
Yeah. He like asked him, have you heard this phrase before? Yeah. And he's like, yeah, it's about, you know, students
taking time off,
you know, being frivolous mm-hmm. or whatever. And Illodin then's like, oh no, but this is what it ought to mean or yeah. whatever. Yeah. He's sort of like telling him, you know, go take chances and, you know, get some experience mm-hmm. and learn. I think that. And that's what El-Jadal was telling him as well.
Yeah.
He was like, although you could, I think that you could kind of tell from El-Jadal's perspective, he was sort of being like, look, the university wants you to fucking leave for a little bit.
Yeah.
We need but I think that he was also distant. Saying like, also look at yourself. You got to start learning some stuff here mm-hmm. and there, man. And so he's, you know, tells that story of,
yeah,
you know, the scholar and the Edemarua.
Yeah, the foolish
Edemarua, I think was what it was called. Yeah, something like that.
The ignorant Rue or
yeah,
whatever.
The ignorant Rue, I think that might be it. But it's like the guy who knows everything from the university mm-hmm. doesn't know how to swim. And so, we can infer that he dies at the end of the story because he doesn't know how to swim, like a relatively basic thing, you know?
Well, I thought it was all a little racist to begin with because of the accent. I'm just kidding.
Right.
So yeah, okay. So you don't necessarily like Voth, but the are you enjoying at least the other elements? I hate to ask, like yeah. a story full of side quests. Are you enjoying the
There's
side factors? Like
so those... much about what exists around K'Voth that is really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the world that's being built is excellent.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of we talked about it at some point during the last weeks of us reading through the series. The ideas mm-hmm. that he has for different things, you know, or kind of original spells or practices, you know, things like that, you know, the way the things that work and all that sort of stuff is all very interesting. The ideas are, you know, pretty incredible. The general writing is pretty good. There's some things that feel lazy in my opinion, but you know, whatever, you can give or take that stuff. So there's so much around, like the, you know, it, like if you had a watermelon and K'Voth was the meat that you're supposed to be eating,
mm-hmm.
everything around that is so good, but it's not supposed to be the stuff that's like super good. Like we should care more about the central story. And I don't know that I care about the central story because I still okay. don't know what it is.
Yeah.
You know, now that I think about it, it's something that I've been saying the whole time. I still don't know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
I still don't know that I have any idea what's going to happen either.
Yeah, it almost seems like for him being expelled from the university, like it should have happened by now.
Right.
Like yeah. at the halfway point between all of the novels, like we've gone halfway through the second novel of a trilogy. Like you'd think he would have been expelled at this point.
Because he even says during one of the interludes, I've spent too much time at the university with this retelling.
Yeah.
And I'm like, is that like a nod where Patrick Rothfuss is like, okay, I ended up spending a little bit longer than I meant to, but at this point I can't go back.
Yeah.
I've got to continue what I started, which I also get.
That was something I think I might have asked you last week, but I know I've wanted to ask you, but I wonder if Patrick Rothfuss like when he's going through the editing process mm-hmm. on his last book, if he was like, hindsight, I wish I hadn't written this, or I wish I could redo mm-hmm. the first two books, because
like maybe he feels like he painted himself into a corner a little bit here and there, you know, he's like, oh, this isn't exactly the way that I actually want to do it now, but I can't help.
Yeah. Yeah. Either that, or like maybe he was like, the Dracus popping up seems so non-important to yeah. what's going on. It's just like, it was a climax to a story. When really, like, he could have made the focal climax being learning about the Chandrian. Like, I wonder if he was forced into writing that Dracus climax to end the novel so that it would, you know, have, like, a cool action scene and stuff. Or if, mm-hmm. you know, like, I wonder if going back through everything, he would maybe change, or if he would add more here and there. Like, if the length was no issue mm-hmm. And it was only to, like, his super fans, I guess.
Right, right.
Yeah, I wonder how much would change. Because it seems, like you're saying, like, he might have painted himself into a corner, so.
Yeah. It's hard to know. And certainly with it, you know, like, we sort of supposed this with Harry Potter while we were reading it. But those are considerably shorter. Mm-hmm. Whereas, if these are, you know, 900, 1,000 pages, however long the third one's going to be, 3,000 pages, mm-hmm. What was then, you know, the uncut version? Is the uncut version of the last book 8,000 pages? And he just had to cut down so much stuff because it was just impossible to have it all in there.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, to your point, that editing process is probably, I would imagine, exponential to whatever, like, a Harry, you know, a Chamber of Secrets is, which is only, like, you yeah. know, 289 pages or something like that. Like, super duper small, right? So the margin for getting stuck in something is so much wider with books of this length, I think.
Yeah.
And certainly with how long it takes for him, you know, it took him, like, almost 10 years for the second one, right? Mm-hmm. And from the second to the third one, it's now been 12, 13 years or something like that, right?
Yeah.
So, like, some other, like, really long period of time. So, you know, the opportunity for him to think of a new idea or to figure out another way to get around that problem that he had, mm-hmm. he's got so much time to do that, yeah, the way that he's thinking now is so different than the way he was thinking when he wrote the second one.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, and like you were saying with Harry Potter, I wonder if maybe he had released this book more of, like, if it was going to be, like, I don't know what those are called, but like a 7-part series, that seems to be a magic number.
Right, yeah.
And, you know, we'd still probably only be on book 5, but...
But then they could be 300, 400 pages mm-hmm. each.
Yeah.
Which maybe makes a little the more time digestible. In between them shorter mm-hmm. and easier to, you know, manage and still be in the same headspace.
Yeah,
and
maybe all those the characters that
we've been talking about. You know?
Yeah, maybe everyone would be able to grow with him as he grew as a writer mm-hmm. and a person.
It'd be more 1-for-1 that way, right? It'd be closer to 1-for-1. Yeah. The ratio would be smaller.
Okay, let's tell him.
Yeah, whatever you've got right now, take the first 300 pages and make it a book, and then go from there.
Pat, we're going to redo this, and it's going to be a 7-part series. You're going to add some stuff because I want more info.
Right. And oh, then, we become the Benioff and Weiss to Patrick Rothfuss's Kingkiller Chronicles as they were to George R. R. Martin's Game of Thrones.
Oh my gosh, we'd get so loaded with money.
We'd and then we'd so be the rich. Most hated, like 50-50 down the middle, like most hated, most loved, like TV producers.
Okay, you can tell me that in my 3 mansions.
Yeah, they, like, don't care. Ouch. They don't give a shit.
Ooh, that hurts.
They don't give a
feelings.
Shit that I think that they're incompetent bastards.
Yeah, as I'm looking out on my replica of King's Landing.
Right, yeah. They live in King's Landing. They built the whole fucking thing.
They pay a full service staff to constantly.
Yeah, exactly. Like, they don't give a shit, and good for them.
Speaking of full service staff, I think it's funny how frequently Patrick Rothfuss points out, like, the food gets colder the nicer your lodgings are.
Right, because you're further from the kitchen.
Which is like, okay, I guess, but it's like, you don't think they would have invented something along the way? Like, maybe this food is supposed to rest for 10 minutes and I roll it to your place?
Right.
Like, I don't know. It's just,
how long? That's just it. How far away are the kitchens where that's a problem?
Is it like 45
what is
minutes
the breaking
to an hour?
Point? Yeah.
Yeah.
What is the... Because I get stuff delivered via Uber Eats, and it's not out the oven hot, but it's hot enough that I'm not complaining at all.
Yeah. So It's funny because I feel like Patrick Rothfuss read that in some like book about castles, you know, like, right, like yeah. You know how we in I think it was intermediate school, I was about to say middle school, intermediate school, which is our middle school. I remember specifically reading a book about like ships, or at least seeing one, and like all these, like it dissected, it sliced a ship in half.
Oh yeah, a bunch of cross sections of different things. Yeah, I love those books.
Yeah, that was cool. I feel like that was. Like, he read one of those about a castle, and he was like, oh, this is how it works, and the food is so far away that, right. Like, one of the side notes was like, by the way, like, food was often cold by the time I got to the camp.
Yeah, it was like some anecdote that he heard or something that he inferred by looking at one of those cross sections. He was like, oh, this would be a great little, like, one-line idea or, you know, thought by one of my characters or something like that. Yeah. I could see that totally.
That's why
what's like the breaking point where you just build a second kitchen on the other side of the castle?
Yeah, and how loud are they that it's like, oh my god, I can't believe I live by the kitchen. God forbid I'd
be next to them, yeah.
Wouldn't you love like walking by and be like, oh my god, my breakfast. Like waking up to the smell of like your bacon and eggs and stuff. Like, oh my god.
I don't know. I don't understand the lives of rich people.
Yeah, we need a castle, man.
I've been thinking that my entire life.
A lot of times I'm watching the Google Chrome...
Oh, like just like the Chromecast screensavers?
Yeah, and sometimes these dope castles will pop up on like islands, and I'm like, oh my, oh, what? Like it just blows my mind that somebody built a castle out on this island.
Right, like the Mont Saint-Michel, that church in France, I think it is.
Yeah, probs.
Yeah.
Dude.
That one's pretty nuts.
I need to look that up. I think I know what you're talking about, but I need to make sure.
It's like just like a single causeway that goes out to it.
I just remembered
it.
It's
like a whole
town.
And
it's, yeah.
Ooh. It's pretty fucking sweet.
That's awesome.
It's like one of the, not like one of the ancient wonders of the world, because the ancient wonders are like, you know, the Sphinx and like shit that.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
But it's it's like a, you know, more modern world wonder or something like that. At the very least, the Civilization games treat it as a world wonder.
Okay. Would you...
gives you like +5 faith.
This is a little sidetrack, but would you live on like a lighthouse island?
I think I could.
I think I could too.
I don't think that it would be a problem for me.
I think I'd enjoy that job for maybe like a couple years.
Yeah, I can't imagine doing it indefinitely. Mm-hmm. But that would, if, you know, I don't know, something crazy happens, like I get fired and I never get to work in my current industry again and everything falls apart. It's like, and I can't pay for the rent because the rent is too damn high and
I'll
all this.
Work in a lighthouse.
Yeah, just like forsake everything and take like 2 years, 3 years to just reset.
That'd be cool. Okay, so... Like, before the show, I remember saying, like, I feel bad that I brought up so many things that we were right about to discuss on this next section, but that's almost, like, par for the course for this show. Like, we always end up bringing up what's about to happen right before they tell us everything.
And it's really difficult to hold that kind of stuff back when you know it.
Yeah, and I honestly thought I was doing a good job,
there wasn't really anything. I think the only time... that I thought like, oh, maybe Jordan let that slip was whenever you said that Devi knows that she sold Ambrose to Plum Bob.
Yeah.
Or not Ambrose, but somebody like she knows the second that he mentions it whenever they have their confrontation that, oh shit, was that it? Like she, you know, and so we find that out, you know, when they have their second interaction that she was, had already like basically figured out that that's what it was.
Yeah.
But I think that was the only thing that you gave any sort of like real hints towards where I then... like saw it coming right before and was like, oh, I think maybe I know this because Jordan dropped it.
I do remember asking you about his chest in his bedroom, and then like they spend a whole chapter on Bast, like, well, what would you do to break in?
Yeah, we get a little interlude just to illustrate to us how difficult this chest is, because it's obviously going to matter later.
His thrice locked chest.
Yeah,
they've alluded to the Lackless family having a chest that has no locks on it.
Oh yeah.
And then also Kvothe's chest has no locks on it.
Oh, Denna's a Lackless, right?
I feel like Denna or Kvothe are Lackless. One of them is a Lackless.
I feel like it has to be Denna.
Okay. I just thought that maybe Kvothe was because of his mom, but I don't know.
It could.
I just, I remember him like singing that. Remember in one of the episodes, like maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago, I was like, remember this nursery rhyme? It was like Lady Lackless had her blacklist. Like,
oh yes.
Likes to bang all the guys.
I do remember that.
Blacklist. Mm-hmm. And his mom was like, hey, don't sing that song. Like, that's not nice.
Right. Like,
I remember thinking like, oh, because she's a Lackless.
Yeah.
But.
I totally forgot about that little clue, and I think that that changes my opinion. Now it must be like whatever her name is that he set the mayor up with,
mm-hmm.
must be like his like aunt or something like that.
And he's I take all back at being attracted Jenna. To her. Gross.
I figured what I was basing it on, because I had forgotten about that little bit from the beginning. That you just talked about.
Well,
song.
And I'm cheating because I've read it also. Like, I feel like they haven't explicitly said any of that, but I feel like maybe the context clues that I have from reading the rest have maybe given me that. But
what I was basing my Denna prediction off of was that whenever they're at dinner for the first time, he talks about how something about her, something that he like recognizes her, or he recognizes features about her. He's just like, God, I must know somebody. Like this, or like, do I know her or whatever, you know? And then, like, we immediately deal with Denna, or we had just immediately dealt with Denna, or something like that. And so I was like, okay, well, this is like the sort of like immediate foreshadowing technique in a way, or whatever it is, you know, like to, you know, force a connection into your mind to be like, hey, look out, you know, what we're looking for.
Yeah, we ran into her quick in Severin, though, for him being like locked in the mayor's, you know, chambers or whatever, like his room.
Mm-hmm. Well, like I think it's like on the fifth day that he finds out what the deal is.
He didn't get his
the four days loot. Where he doesn't really do anything, or he goes and like goes on some walks here and there, but he doesn't know if he's getting anywhere. Those 4 days they make last like 15 chapters or something like that.
Well, but he doesn't go get his loot again until like day 10.
Yeah.
Of his,
it's like cutting it like right in the middle.
I guess that
not
maybe
middle, I'm sorry, cutting it like right at the end.
Yeah, maybe day four of his time with the mayor could have been day eight in his time of, you know, pawning his loot.
It took a long time to get through the first like 4 days of it. I noticed it like halfway through. He was like, and you know, by that third day, and I was like, what?
It's funny how he procured the money to get his loot and stuff, because it wasn't through the initial reasons that he was brought. To the mayor, like he was brought to the mayor to be his bard, you know, like his courting
his courting agent
liaison, yeah, and his hitch, dude. He was Will Smith.
Ah, yeah,
and then he ends up getting
book
it
is based on Hitch.
He was watching Hitch and was like, "Both needs to do that."
Oh, that's a great idea.
And then he ends up getting his like a purse of money, because a king is never far from his purse. Or wait. A gentleman is never far from their purse.
Oh, yeah.
And so he gave him like a purse full of cash to go buy like medicine because he happened to be.
Kubo discovers that he's being poisoned.
Yeah, that happened really quick too. I remember it being a main plot line, but it just happened so fast that
Yeah.
I was like, I'm glad he went and got the medicine.
Right.
And then I'm glad it worked out too. I felt so bad for like, God, I can't remember his manservant's name.
Oh yeah,
Stokes
or something like that.
Stapes.
Stapes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I felt bad because he was like, I thought the little Flitwicks were giving their life for yours, you know, like
right,
you were sucking their souls out. And
he was just being all sweet and honest.
Yeah. Yeah, he's like crying and stuff. Like, I'm sorry, I didn't mean anything.
Right.
And then they're all friends. And so I did like the fact, because that was such a very normal human thing for him to think. But like when he was eating dinner with like the mayor and Stapes, and it was just the three of them, and like that one guard was the only one that was watching.
Right.
He was like, man, I hope he's a gossip, because this is cool.
Right. Yeah.
Like, I need this as my reputation.
Right.
God, what is that guy's name? Does it start with a V?
Oh, the person he plays tack with?
Yeah. Denna's potential patron?
Yeah. Because he disappears when she disappears.
Stakes? Stapes?
No.
No.
Stapes is the manservant.
We just said that.
Yeah, I don't know. But then also whenever Kvothe and Denna are in the garden, and he's like, oh, let me introduce you to the mayor and Melora, I think was her first name. I can't remember.
Mayor Alvaron and, the Lackless.
Yeah, it was like Melora Maelowin, or something.
Maelowin Lackless, yeah. I think.
They, you know, they walk by and he's like, yeah, let me introduce you, blah, blah, blah. And then it's like, well, I don't know, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm,
and,
totally.
And so I thought that what was going to happen was, because I was able to see like ahead that the chapter was going to end very soon.
Yeah.
And I was like, that much writing is plenty of time for him to convince her, them to turn the corner.
Mm-hmm.
And then for, Lackless and Denna to be like, huh? Like point at each other. And then like Denna run away and her be like, daughter, come back here. Like that kind of reveal. You know, that kind of like almost Scooby-Doo kind of like reveal. And I was like, that must be what's going to happen. And then it didn't happen. I was like, okay, well, yeah, that would have been a little too cartoonish. But I felt like that was like a good, at the very least, it was like a good tension build to the point of them being introduced to me. Like, oh, shit, how did, you know, we run into each other there? Because Denna doesn't talk about her past.
And things are going too well for Quoth at the mayor's. You know, like some shit needed to happen. You're right. That's such a good idea.
So that's why I was thinking that it was that she would be Denna's relative. Mm-hmm. But now that you've brought up reminded me of the song that he's singing, that makes it the more likely prediction, I think.
Yeah.
I think that's a little, like, you know, too close for it to just be like a joke, like, ha, you thought.
So what do you think about Kvoth's project at the fishery? His passion project or whatever.
That was exciting.
Yeah.
To sort of like think about. How is this made?
Mm-hmm.
What are the possible principles of it that I could never understand because this is a magic of a world that doesn't exist?
Yeah.
But even however is it they explain it, like, you know, how is it that this is going to work? I thought that it was kind of cool.
Yeah. I thought it was a cool idea, just like the arrow catch, like kind of giving them a little, just a traveling group, like a cushion, you know?
Right.
And then he was like, I don't want to sell it for that much. Like, I want everyone to be able to afford it. Which, like, 8 talents, I don't know how much money that is, but I feel like 43 pennies is a talent. Because that happened at some point. He was like, 43. Right. Somebody gave him like 43 copper pennies or some sort of penny. And then it was like a talent. So, like, I don't know. I think of a talent as like $1,000, though. Yeah. Oh, didn't he pay for shoes for 8 talents? So he's selling his arrow catch for the same price as a homemade pair of shoes.
I can't remember.
Maybe talent is $100.
Maybe. I can't remember.
Yeah.
I truly have no like conversion on any of the money here.
I mean, in this economy, you'll never be able to. I'm kidding. Okay. Well, yeah, I thought that was a cool little concept. And then Ambrose bringing him up on trial, which was something that the chronicler really wanted to hear. He's like, that's the first story I heard of you at the university. But
he just skips over that.
Yeah.
Which I appreciated. Like
I do too. The shipwreck one,
I felt like we got, like you were saying, like almost like we got cheated a little bit. Mm-hmm. Like that could have been really cool. But I think, like I, you know, said, I think I can understand why it happened that way and I'm fine with it. But I'm really appreciative of having skipped over the trials because that would have been tedious in my opinion. Which he says it was tedious.
He might have even written that and been like, oh my God.
Yeah. He looked back on it and thought, oh, fuck that.
I'll release this as Kvoth, as like the lost, because supposedly Kvoth wrote it down.
This will be like short story sucks. 3.
Yeah. So, okay. So Ambrose brings him to trial. That I'm glad we skipped that. We had a few more interludes than we did the last time, which was kind of fun.
We got like 2 or 3 in a row at one point.
Yeah. And then, like, the mayor of the town came in to write his will and stuff.
They go play with the chest.
Yeah, the damn fine apple scene, which I thought that was silly.
I thought was funny. I was laughing at that. I was like, that's a pretty good set of jokes right there.
And, I liked that everyone was at the Waystone Inn for lunch that day. You know, it was cool. Like, the whole town got together, even though, like, some awkward stuff happened with some demons or whatever.
Right.
Nobody was talking about that, but... it was just, it was fun.
I can almost say that. Because of the awkward demon thing that happened. That
everyone needed to get together. Yeah.
And it was also like harvest days where they were all like, fuck, that happened last night and we're working fucking harvest day. Let's go.
Yeah, we've earned a reward. We've been harvesting all day. Yeah. We're about to sell all this. We got to let these crops. Loose. I'm trying to think of maybe what else happened to Coat, but I don't think much else did. It was just... like a little bit with Bast, but nothing too.
Nothing terribly pivotal happened.
Yeah, it was mostly just the Kvothe story, and even Kvothe going through, like, we reconciled everything with Devi.
She, like, immediately, with no effort.
Yeah, like, Fella just was talking on Kvothe's behalf, and then Fella and Sim seem like they're hitting it off, which is nice, mm-hmm. and Will, I really want to get with Devi, but I just don't know why. I don't think it's going to happen. It might, but... Yeah. And then... Who else was there? Mola,
mm-hmm.
who is just kind of... She seems cool. Mola. Yeah. Yeah, but not much happened. They did their plan against Ambrose. They got... Kvothe got his... Got Dena's ring back. He's friends with Devi again. He got a loan for the trip he's taking currently for a year and a day.
It was an extension on his loan.
Oh, that's what it was. Yeah, yeah. And then... he was learning about the Chandrian a lot, too, right before he left.
Yeah, because that little girl that he helped out back at the town remembered something and was able to paint a portion of the pot for him.
Yeah, and she remembered 8 Chandrian. Wasn't that weird?
Well, there were 8 figures on the pot. Yeah, 7 were Chandrian, and 1 was the Emir that's on there that she drew.
Oh. Nice. I didn't notice that. So are
and so that's what brings the Emir back to the forefront of Kvothe's mind and why he starts trying to obsessively research them, because he's already kind of given up on finding anything about the Chandrian in the archives because, you know, everybody around him just treats it like it's a child's tale.
Thus but adding...
The Emir is like historically like, you know, in stuff.
Yeah. And the and that kind of adds to the fan theory of Master Loren being part of the Emir because like it was basically stripped from the archives. Historical information about the Emir. Mm-hmm. And yeah, Master Loren would be all over the archives. Like he would even be cunning enough to ask in like a roundabout way, you know, like if you find anything about the blah, blah empire, which happened to be highly influenced by the, you know, the Emir, like, bring it to me. But he didn't say Emir, so nobody was like catching on.
Right.
And then some Aeolian stuff happens. Not really. He just plays at the Aeolian.
I don't think anything really alien happens.
Yeah, except for Threp getting him counsel of the mayor. Yeah, and then he goes to he goes on his adventure to the mayor's. And
there is that one night that they spend at the Aeolian and get like extra drunk.
Hammered. Oh, and tells the story about
the Waystone or whatever they call it. Yeah,
he tells the Edema Rue story, which I really liked. I enjoyed that one a lot. I feel like it's going to come up, but I don't know if it will.
It provided an example for why Kvothe is still as immature as he ever was, because he immediately is like offended by Ambrose being offended by the stereotype against the Aeturans.
And Simon.
Yeah, Simon. Not Ambrose, yeah.
Simon.
and then whenever Simon like retorts back, like, well, you know, what about the way that they talk about, you know, this or that or the other thing in the story, and Kvothe gets all offended, like, well, because of Demaru this and that, and we are this and that, and blah blah blah. Like he, you know, immediately gets offended because
like the Rue Hunt from the Aeturan Empire.
Right. And I was but don't you see that you could possibly perpetuate a stereotype about other peoples as well. Yes, like the Edamaru aren't the only victims out there.
Yeah, and your troop probably might have been one of the best ones. So, like, I don't know if you might want to be setting yours as like the bar for what all Edamaru were doing. Because, like, there's got to be some truth to the rumors about the Rue. You know, maybe there were people that were claiming they were Rue. And then they were just like travelers and they were and they're taking advantage of that like the Rue name. So they're like, the Rue are great performers. And then they just like get a bunch of people pregnant in town and leave or whatever. Like, cause that was something that happened in like book one that they were like, last time we had travelers.
And then that's what causes not the Edema Rue stuff, but that kind of general image that the same, kind of immaturity that he has in that where he's unable to see outside of himself is why he gets in the fight with Dena. Because Dena does nothing but sing a song that she wrote about a story but with the wrong interpretation, and Kvothe can't do anything but just like, you know, start shouting at her about how she's wrong.
Yeah.
And how dare she tell this story? He doesn't say how dare you tell the story incorrectly, but that's what he's like sort of portraying. And it's just because he has decided in his head that, you know, if the story is opposite of the way he heard it initially, then what does that mean about the people that killed his parents? And so he's making it personal where it doesn't need to be personal. Mm-hmm. And so then somebody, you know, who he, you know, supposedly loves very much, just, you know, outside of anything that he's never told her, by the way.
Yeah. And, yeah. He's also scared that, like, the Chandrian will come get her for singing songs, like, about.
Right. Yeah.
You know, stuff that's close. It doesn't.
But for him to just, like, rage like that,
mm-hmm.
and not consider a different perspective at all.
Yeah.
Like, the things that before, like, they start, like, shouting at each other to the point where they're just, like, you know, yelling slurs at each other more mm-hmm. or less. They're still both a little coherent in their arguments. And her arguments are, like, what she says about him is, like, perfectly valid mm-hmm. about how, like, you know, you can't accept that you're wrong, or, like, you know, just because somebody heard it a different way that you did, yours must be the right one. And, you know, you just want to fix me and all this sort of stuff. And you just want to be, you know, the one who is going to do this for me when everybody else couldn't and blah, 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 when I can just do it myself.
Mm-hmm.
She was making all, like, totally valid points. And then they got to the point of rage at each other where they both started acting like children. But
yeah.
But that, I just felt like that fight was as pointless, if not more pointless, than the one with Devi. But because it took zero effort, if anything, negative effort, to get back with Devi in the friendship circle. Yeah. I don't have much worries about this fight either. It's just going to be resolved, you know, before I know it.
Yeah. And I feel like we're not going to see Denna for a minute because of the fight. Mm-hmm. You know, and then,
which is another, like, perfect excuse for her to just disappear again.
Yeah,
because that's something that we've been built up to know is going to happen
mm-hmm.
this entire series so far, is that she disappears. So it's, you know, it's never a problem for her to be out of the story so that something else can happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Kvothe is, like, on. He's, like, living it up right now at the mayor's. You know,
right? Yeah, he should be having, like, the greatest time.
Yeah, he's got the old arcanist's, like, lab, you know?
Right, yeah.
He's got, like, full access to basically anything.
Everything's working, like, perfectly in his favor.
Yeah.
Except for the Denna stuff, because he gets a lark that he needs to find her a new patron.
Mm-hmm.
And then starts trying to, like, force that on her or whatever.
Yeah.
And then the song stuff or whatever. But, you know, he's just so frustrating to me. And, like, I used to make fun of Harry all the time, right, when mm-hmm. we were going through Harry Potter, because Harry's fun to make fun of. But he's still not infuriating in this way. And partly because it's a children's book, so the stakes are different.
Yeah.
But also because the mistakes that Harry makes sometimes are just like, oh, you're just a dumb kid.
Mm-hmm.
You can see that he's just a dumb kid. This feels different for some reason, and I think it might be because he's constantly portraying himself as not being a kid, both mm-hmm. when he's young and when he's old. At each turn, anytime that age is brought into the discussion, the words that come out of Kvothe's mouth, no matter how old he actually is that he is not a kid.
Yeah, don't underestimate me.
And maybe that's, like, you know, a self-referential sort of, like, boom, he is a kid and he thinks he's not a kid, right? Like, get it?
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. It just seems like that's just, like, a dumb joke to make. To be like, oh, he is a kid, but he thinks he's not. Like, oh, don't we all think that way when we're kids? Like, yes, we all know that.
Yeah, and then he's so competent in so many areas and yet so incompetent in some of the most basic. It's just like, yeah, I'm right there with you. I'm ready for him to grow up a little bit.
Yeah. There's maybe, and I don't know how it would be more so, but maybe the nature of his character being that way, like you just said, like, he's really good at some stuff. He's a total idiot at the other things. There's something about his character's constant issues. There's just not enough elegance to it, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Is the only way I can sort of, like, think of to describe what might be lacking as an idea.
Yeah.
You know, not to be specific about it. There just seems like it's just so inelegant the way that he is.
Okay.
There doesn't seem to be any true balance anywhere. Nothing seems to flow in a way that I believe.
Okay. Yeah, no, I see what you're saying. It's also grandiose, you know, also everything that he deals with. It's mm-hmm. like it's.
And it is his own retelling of mm-hmm. the story as well,
mm-hmm.
which that would be super meta and impressive if that's all that it really was that, you know, because it's him telling the story of himself and he's such a megalomaniac
mm-hmm.
that, of course, it's going to sound this way when he tells it. But then he also spends some time being like, you know, I wish that I could tell you it was this way or that way, but I'm going to give you the truth here. I was fucking stupid.
Yeah.
So it's not that at the same time.
Make up your mind.
He's telling us that he's being impartial.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I don't know. I can't do any better. It's just the way that I see it, I guess.
What are your notes? Do you have any good ones?
Most of my, I don't have actual notes. It's just that the Denna fight was so recent in my reading. You know, it was like one of the obviously chapter. It was the last chapter. Yeah. And, you know, I finished reading it last night and then went to sleep. That's not entirely true. I watched a couple of things and then I went to sleep. But anyways, I don't have any notes on that because it was, I knew it would be fresh in my head. And it got me so like angry.
I'm glad I'm done with the reading.
And like frustrated that I knew exactly what it was about it that made me that way. And so I knew that I'd be able to remember it. And, you know, we just talked about all that.
Yeah.
But I do have a note from earlier in the reading section where, and this is not like a note in any direction. It's just something I observed. Will we ever have a story where some villainous character / organization doesn't set their slogan as "for the greater good"?
Oh yeah, I know.
That's like every bad guy's thing, right? Or like if they're like a scientist or whatever,
they try to make them semi-relatable.
Or, yeah, mm-hmm. It's always like "for the greater good." Is that's literally what's his name?
Grindelwald.
Grindelwald's state saying is, you know, for the greater good, or whatever the variation is, I can't remember. It's just such a common idea of, like, you know, the person who thinks they have all the answers and thinks they're doing the right thing. Like, you know, even just relatively recently in pop culture, Thanos, that's his motivation, is I'm going to save the galaxy. And the cost of saving the galaxy is murdering half the galaxy, is his idea. But he's doing it for the greater good.
Yeah.
He doesn't say that. He says balance.
That's the implied.
But
it's
the same idea, you know? And so, like, I don't really care. Like, because it's in everything, of course it could also be in this. But at the same time, I'm sort of like, come on.
I feel like the only notes that I have that we didn't already cover, the first thing I wrote was, like, about the Chandrian and how Nina drew 8, but you already were like, one of them was Damir. And then when they were telling the story about Chronicler, when they were making it up, I felt like Quoth maybe gave us a hint as to, because I was saying his name was hidden away, like in that that chest that he has in his room. And he even said that, like, the king that, like, the Chronicler was chasing after, like, that the Chronicler was trying to prove his he was trying to get, like, something that was as valuable as his daughter to, like, trade the hand of the daughter, you know?
Yeah.
So when he was, and he also, he couldn't just write in his book of truth, like, just the king stopped being a dick and he let me marry his daughter, because the king had, like, all his secrets and his name hidden away. Mm-hmm. And it wrote, and he said that his name was hidden away in a book of glass enclosed in a copper box inside an iron chest. And that was the High King of Modig. And I was like, man, are those things that we should know? Like, is that why? Yeah. Like, is this why the fan? Yeah, is this why the fan theories are like copper has no name? But then, then Elodin, like, breaks down the wall of copper in his old room in the crook. You know,
one of the locks on Kvothe's chest is copper, and the other's iron. And we didn't get a mention of what the third one is.
One of the what?
The locks on Kvothe's thrice locked chest.
Oh, okay, yeah.
The one that Bast works on is copper because he doesn't want to touch the iron one. Mm-hmm. But there's no mention of what the third one is.
Ooh, auspiciously. There is no. It's like the lockless part, probably.
Right, yeah. There's some sort of connection being drawn between that story that he tells about the King of Modig stuff and, I mean, you know, whatever the other third thing is. I don't think that the parallel is just between the King of Modig's shit and his chest. I think there's probably another part of that puzzle as well.
Yeah. Those are all my two notes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that we didn't already cover.
I thought of something else a second ago while we were talking. You mentioned about, like, the Emir. There was another part of, like, why I was, like, a little bit extra annoyed with Kvothe's fight with Denna and then getting all personal about like why his version of the story is correct.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of bothered me in a way because it's the story that she's singing is about the formation of the Emir, right? And potentially what's his name being Haliax, who is mm-hmm. potentially the person who's, you know, still in the Chandrian and was there when his parents were murdered.
Yeah.
That's the story that he hears from what's his name at the end?
Scarpy.
And not up until this point
mm-hmm.
have we heard from Kvothe, whether him speaking or him thinking it, that he recognizes that the Emir were connected to them in that way. Or there's a connection from the second story that he hears from Scarpy
mm-hmm.
that whenever he gets like taken away. And there was like a key thing that I thought of when I heard that story that was about the Emir and their involvement and what that sort of means for a lot of different things that I thought, oh, that's very interesting. I'm going to try and remember that. And it hasn't come up again until right now.
Okay.
And so that feels a little cheap to me for the same reason that I really disliked the game Heavy Rain that came out like mm-hmm. in 2007.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because, so it's like a murder mystery, right? There's a serial killer on the loose and you play yeah. as several different characters. The murderer is one of the characters that you play. Mm. And you don't know until the game just tells you. You're in the person's head.
Yeah.
Doing things to try and find the murderer. But you're the murderer. It's just cheap yeah. storytelling, right?
Okay.
To just pull something out of nowhere like mm-hmm. that with no proper buildup and no anything.
Yeah, you didn't figure anything out.
It just seems really convenient. Mm-hmm. If like, even in that moment, whenever he heard that detail, and, you know, I can't remember the exact detail right now, whenever he heard that detail in Scarpy's story, if he had just like in his own head thought, oh, but that means this or the other thing, mm-hmm. that would have been acceptable to me. But there's like no connections being drawn in his head as so far as has been presented to us, the reader.
Well, he did say when he first started telling his story that some things might make more sense in the format he's telling it.
Yeah.
But living through it, it's a little different.
Right.
So, be more forgiving, Will? No, I mean, I know what you're saying. Like, for a guy to have such perfect memory, and then for these things to come up, how do you not spend the rest of the night thinking about when you heard that story or you know, all those different mm-hmm. things that you've researched in the archives? Like, how would you not be able to kind of put those things together? I guess, I don't know. Easier from the outside looking in, I guess, too.
Yeah.
But still.
I think that's, you know, probably a, it's reflective of how difficult it is to write complicated stories. And wherever it is that we're going, like, you know, I've been saying, I don't know what's happening. I don't know what's going to happen. And part of that is because it's so complicated, whatever it is that is happening.
Mm-hmm.
We're all over the place with this story so far. Which isn't in itself a bad thing, but I imagine that's excessively difficult to put together.
Yeah, and honestly, I feel like the rest of this book, even having read it multiple times, I still kind of feel like I don't know what's happening in the main storyline. And like, it's almost like Kvothe himself is going on a side quest, and then he's going to be like, oh, sorry, I spent too much time on the side quest. Now I need to, now I need to tell you about when I killed the king.
Right.
And that'll probably be like at the beginning of the next book or something. Like, not that anything at the end of this book makes me think that. It's just how quickly it happens every time we say, like, when is this coming up again? And then, like, the next chapter we read is like, oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, man, I kind of don't really know what else to say about this section, but I can't wait for the next bit. It's going to be like more, it'll be this section that I kept alluding to in like previous podcasts about that other book that we read that like, this is the side.
Oh, right. Yeah.
We're going to get some of that, I think. And we're going to meet one of the, I can't remember what they're called. They're the people that like fidget a lot but are really good at fighting.
The quiet people or whatever. Yeah, I can't remember what they're called either. I think it also started with an A, like the Emir, but not the Emir.
Mm-hmm. Adem?
Yes.
Yeah, Adem mercenaries.
Those are the ones that teach him how to fight, right?
Yeah, he does give
That's
you that.
That's what he promises,
like
Aaron.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, if you stay and listen to my story today, this is what you'll hear.
Yeah, so like, we'll meet an Adem mercenary soon, and like, I don't know if he'll necessarily learn how to fight soon, but we do meet a mercenary from them, and we learn a little bit more about them, which is cool. And yeah, I'm just excited. This is like what I do in video games that like have big storylines. Like I'll just go off on all the side quests, like Skyrim and right, Morrowind and all those. Like I just get lost in the side story. And I feel like that might've been what happened when Patrick was writing this. We're on a first name basis. When Pat was writing this,
right?
He got lost in the side quests.
I could believe that.
Because
there's so much detail in everything that happens.
Yeah. And it's so much fun. That,
it
like,
really can be. As much as I get frustrated with the character growth, unless I'm doing like a 250-page like marathon day, I'm not ever really ready to stop.
Mm-hmm.
Except for like the Dabby fight and the Denna fight. Because those were like just like two situations where I was just like, I need a break.
Yeah.
But everything else, I'm like, yeah, let's go some more. Let's do some more. Let's find out some more shit.
It makes sense why his passion is like, maybe writing for a video game, you know, like he's a world builder. He's a quest creator. Like he's got all these different ideas that he's got to get out and just,
I think that he both sees the entire forest and at the same time can't see the forest for all the trees.
I got you.
Like,
he
has this whole world there and he knows what he wants it to be. And he's excited to get to all the corners of it. But like on the journey there, he kind of doesn't really know what it is to do on the journey there. Maybe something like that. That's not the best way. That's not exactly what I meant to say, but
yeah, I think I know what you're saying though. Just yeah. And he's already so descriptive on everything that like you were saying with the forest analogy, it's like, I feel like he might've only discovered the first 30% of the forest by the time he's done with the three books because of how much detail and how like ADD he might be, like, oh wait, look at this bug. And then we go into like a couple chapters about a bug and how we can learn to build our chakra as a like a defensive armor plate or whatever, like our alar. You know, we can use it as an armor. Wait, bugs are just wearing their alar on their outsides? It's just like, that would be so dumb. That happens. No. He learns how to fight from bug people.
Oh, nice.
I was kind of waiting. I was kind of thinking that there might be, you know how in like a ton of anime, there are like beast people, like an alligator
sort of
man
like
or something.
Semi-animal or bestial person.
Yeah. I don't know why.
There's always cat girls.
Yes.
Thank God.
Yeah. But I don't know why I was expecting something like that in this world to pop up. Because as of yet, I guess Bast maybe is that. He's like a goat man. But yeah.
But that's like at the point of being otherworldly.
Yeah.
You know.
It's not like they're a common place.
He's like from
a
parallel dimension or something like that.
Yeah.
Is the impression I get.
That's a good impression. I think that's correct.
Nice.
But I don't know.
This is sort of like the way that it felt to me whenever any sort of hint as to what he was given.
Now that we're talking about the Fae, when Will and Sim and Kvothe were all wasted that one night and talking about like, where would you want to be if you could go like anywhere?
Yeah.
And Kvothe was like, the other side of the river, I'd like to take a nap in my bed. And he's like, okay.
Right.
And then
Will wants to go to the Fae.
Yeah. And then I think that they ended up...
It's the right choice.
Oh, when they were... when they were placing bets on like the next day and they were like and confirming through their research or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Sim, he was pulling up about like how somebody was a pagan, you know, and then it ended up like there was a little section about how they were talking about this one forest where people got like there were reports of people getting lost in the Fae.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like... Will can go there and get lost in the
There's also that report of people, of men from the village getting destroyed by Falurian.
Because she's so freaking hot.
Yeah.
She boinks him
she's
to
like
death.
She's like the, not the Athena, the Aphrodite character.
She straight up like boinks him to death.
Nice.
And can you imagine in a world where like... We have so much stimulus. I need to rephrase how I start this.
Okay.
We have so much stimulus. Like, can you imagine, like, just day to day, like, we've got access to, like, all the social medias. If you wanted, you have, like, porn at your fingertips. Like, there's just, like, there are websites you can go on your phone to date and, like, meet people. It's just, in this, it's like you're in a small town in a rural area, and like you're going down the path, and then you hear music, which you never hear because music is rare.
Yeah.
And so you're like, oh my God, that's amazing. I need more of this. Not to mention it's magical. So then you of course go into the woods, and then the hottest thing in the world like bangs you to death. And then how much do you really think you could even take before you die? Like, or have a heart attack or whatever? Because it's like, we're overloaded with stimulus, so maybe we could take more. But like, I feel like if I was just a sheltered little farm boy, like I would just have a heart attack or something.
The 800s, and gave somebody black tar heroin. You know, like it would just murder them immediately, probably.
Fellurian is heroin, dude.
Yeah.
I didn't even notice that until you just said it. You are so right.
Somebody on a podcast I was listening to the day was talking about they were doing like an overrated, underrated section or something like that. And they were like, the sort of like thought exercise of going to the past and presenting old people with new technology. That's overrated. That's a stupid thing to talk about. If you gave somebody from medieval times McDonald's, you would immediately have them with a heart attack and they'd be dead. They would not be excited about it. It would be the worst thing. Stop thinking about that.
Their body couldn't handle it. Yeah.
I was like, oh shit, you're right.
Yeah, dude, sometimes even I'll eat like a... Dude, there's this Jack in the Box by my house.
Yeah.
Down to that Jack in the Box. Like every time I go, I wake up in the middle of the night like... and like throwing it. Like I have to throw up. It's just... Sorry to all those Jack in the Box fans, but like...
Yeah, fast food... A lot of fast food is really, really bad. I eat McDonald's like way too much just because it's literally dirt cheap. It's the cheapest thing that I can get in a pinch. Especially when I don't have any food ready, which I rarely ever do. I eat a lot of McDonald's. And every single time, I feel it just like sit in my stomach like a fucking rock.
Well, those breatharians said that it'll make you live forever. So you're good.
Good. Because that's the other thing that I want. I either want to live forever or I want to die when I'm like, I don't know, like 42.
Or I want to die a couple years ago. So I'm on the live forever train right now.
Yeah. That's what I want.
Yeah.
All or nothing, baby. That's me.
Do they don't have trains in this universe, right?
No.
Like stage coaches and that's it?
Yeah.
Boo.
I think that's why they mean every now and then, once or twice, they've used the phrase like a coach and four or something like that.
The four legs horses. Of a horse. Oh, four horses.
I assume that's what it means.
That's probably what it means. Well, what do you think? What do you think is going to happen? I mean, Kvothe is... sitting high. I mean, he just got in a fight with Denna, but like as soon as he goes home, he's like still in the mayor's good graces. He's on the path to getting him his chick. Like the mayor is getting his girl.
I think at this point, like there's only a couple of things that can possibly happen in Severin still, right?
Yeah.
Okay, three things actually. One, something else happens and he gets in the mayor's bad graces and has to leave.
Right.
Two, the person that he plays tack with is Denna's patron. That gets found out. He's Mr. Ash or Master Ash or whatever.
Yeah.
That gets found out somehow. And Kvothe does something and has to leave or just leaves because it's like shocking to him or whatever. And so something happens. The third option is that Ambrose starts trouble because Ambrose always starts trouble when he's needed most to start trouble. And get the story moving. And he's not far because he is also on a break from school for the same reason, the trial.
Yeah, and there was a point where Kvothe was like, the only person I even know is Ambrose in the near vicinity. And it's even like, Catechus, I'd rather die than
the Arcanist that was working for him, he talks about how he knows something about Ambrose, the Jackass family. Like, it's just a reminder that he's right there.
The Jackass family.
But he's not far. He's closer to Kvothe than anybody else he knows aside from Denna whenever we run into Denna again. So, like, those are the three things, in my opinion, that could possibly happen to get him out of Severin. Because he has to go back to school at some point. We know that he leaves the school because he's expelled.
Mm-hmm.
They say so, I think, at some point.
Yeah.
So we know have to get that part some point, right? He's not going to be in Severin until whatever the next major thing is. Like, the next major thing is going to be him going back to school.
Well, no matter what, Kvothe has Stapes' ring.
Mm-hmm.
That ring of bone.
That bone ring, yeah.
Which is like, that goes beyond all courtly things. That's like a...
It's like a life debt. Like a leaky life debt.
Exactly. It's like, I owe you everything, mm-hmm. pretty much, and like no matter what, you're in my good books.
Right. So even or at the very least, it's also like one.
One favor. Like, yeah.
Any kind of favor, period. You want me to murder myself? You can cash in this ring for it to happen.
That's so funny. That's probably more likely what the ring means.
And it's going to be something like, you know, he has to escape Severin. And so he like, you know, he runs into Stapes and he's like, cashes it in. Yeah. And that's how he gets out the back gate or whatever. You know, that would, I could see that happening.
Yeah, if something does go awry with the mayor, no matter what, he like...
It happens with Arya and Jaqen H'ghar at the end, doesn't it? She like, because she owns him for 3 lives.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever it is that happens, I can't remember exactly. She tells Jaqen she wants him to go murder somebody, and he's like, I will not do that. And he says, all right then. She says, all right then, murder yourself. And he's like, I will go do it then. Like, you know, whenever she needs it the most, she's able to cash in that same kind of favor, you know, mm-hmm. the one thing that you can ask me to do anything that I normally wouldn't necessarily do for somebody.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I feel like he's got an escape at least. I mean, that might not mean that he's got, his finances covered at the university. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if Stapes would necessarily consider being his patron. But it seems like maybe at the very least he's got like a backup plan because mm-hmm. he has this life debt to the
for that to have been described to us. Yeah, it's going to be cashed in at some point.
Yeah, and knowing Kvothe, something is probably going to happen that's going to upset like his relationship in Severin, whatever mm-hmm. it is with whomever it might be.
Right. Yeah.
And we already know that Melania. No, what's her name?
Oh,
Meluin.
The Lackless.
Like, Melania Lackless.
Yeah, it's a very made up name.
So like we know that I think it's Meluin, and I think we already know she doesn't like the Rue. So like something's probably gonna happen there. Like they're gonna like both will blow up about something dumb,
right?
But I don't know. It's been a while since I've read this book, so I'm excited to get through this next section and to talk about it, because I know some pretty crazy stuff happens. And, dude, I cannot wait for 2 weeks from now when we're going over the last section, because it's like, then we get to fan theorize and, like,
that's everything, then it's, man. Then it's not done, it all, right? Yeah.
And then...
her name's Meluin.
Meluin, okay. Mm-hmm. So... Yeah, so something might happen there because she already hates the Rue. So if she finds out Kvothe is Rue,
that's too obvious to not come back up, right?
Yeah, like if the mayor's, it's probably not even going to be like that he's in the mayor's bad graces, but like the mayor's going to be like, oh, well, my chick hates you. So later, fool.
Right.
You know?
So and, thanks. And maybe here's something to help you out. But bye.
Yeah, but I'm not going to give you my, like, you don't get to wear my colors.
I can no longer retain your services because my wife is a racist towards you.
Yeah, but I'll give you some money or something.
Yeah.
And I did like the idea of Kvothe being like, I could play the blah blah lute. I forgot what it was called, but like the super fancy lute, like the...
Oh, right. The one that's like the Stradivarius mm-hmm.
I thought that was kind of...
Her being racist against the Ademaru would also be like a great reason for her to be Denna's mom.
Oh yeah,
because then she could be like, "No daughter of mine will ever be with a dirty Ademaru or whatever." Yeah, you know? Just throwing out that racist shit.
That ravel.
Yeah, that would be a perfect bit of flavor to whatever that relationship would have been with her being Denna's mother.
Man,
but they didn't meet, and now they're fighting, so they're not going to meet.
Dude, are we going to collab write a book soon after this? Because we're just theorizing hardcore. We can make some good twists in a story.
And that's what happens when you read books all the time and talk about them all the mm-hmm. time, is that you then start to see the pieces. And you can see the puzzle before it's complete.
I'd like to play a game. We're Jigsaw.
I'd like to play a game.
Well, I think that's all I have.
Yeah, that's all I've got, I think.
Yeah. So we said read to chapter 114.
Yes, that I believe is correct. Yes, to 114. This is going to be 40 chapters exactly.
Yeah.
The title of chapter 114 is His Sharp and Single Arrow. So stop there.
Well, I have no idea what that has to do with, because Kvothe doesn't use a bow. He can barely use that crossbow.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he makes an arrow clink. Like, But that's a lame. That would be so lame if like the chapter.
It could be a reference to a story.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. Yeah. That could be it. That's a good idea. I was like, what the hell is this chapter about? So stop at chapter 114. Mm-hmm. You guys know how to find us, anchor.fm/ears-stamps. That has links to all our social medias, which, you know, you can also find us at Instagram and Twitter, ears_stamps. And yeah, tell your friends, leave us some reviews, interact with us. We'd love to hear what you think about the story. Like we've been saying, there's so much side quest that it's like it's almost like a third side quest to figure out the main storyline.
Right. It's it like really is like you quest. Said, getting into a giant open world game and then, you know, 15 hours in realizing that there's a main story back over there.
Wait,
know?
I'm not even playing the game. Yeah,
right. I've been in Blackreach for 6 hours.
Yeah, I'm level 30, right. But like I haven't done the first quest.
Let us know stuff if you feel so inclined. All the things that Jordan said.
Yeah, and share with your friends. That's the biggest thing, and let us know what you think.
Yeah. That's definitely my favorite part of this series so far, is just speculating.
Yeah.
Because the rest of it is just Kvothe, and we all know how I feel about that so far.
Yeah, dude, I've been so enjoying like talking about the story, too. Like, just all these ideas. Mm-hmm, like, I've given you little hints at some stuff. Like, I think I've even talked about how some stuff that we're about to find out, I think. So, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Yeah, I am too. I continue to be ready to continue reading despite the complaints that I continue to bring up at the table.
That's so funny. I wonder how many people agree with you too. That it's just like, it's an interesting world to play in. I like that we're doing the side quest.
I was talking to my coworker at job 2 the other day about that we're reading this. The one that I told you is a big fan of the series. Yeah. And he was like, what do you think about, you know, this and that? And we got on the subject of how like I can't stand Kvothe at this point. And I was telling him all this stuff. And he was like, I see exactly what you're talking about. So there must be somebody else out there that feels, along the same lines that I do. But yeah, let's keep going on. We've got two more sections of reading. About 275 pages again this time. So we'll see you all next week. I'll haul that. I'm Will Hedrick.
I'm Jordan Schaffer.
This is Dog Ears and Timestamps.